Welcome to another edition of the TJ Slideways podcast, coming to you live from the Engine Pro Studios just outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Another exciting news day as the Buckeye Outlaw Sprint Series, once again backed by Movon Transport, released their 2016 schedule, 22 races at 16 different tracks this year, and Aaron Fry from the Boss Series joins us on the line. And Aaron, it's been quite a wild ride the past 5 years getting the series together, and today you released another very exciting schedule.
Yeah, it's been a real exciting ride. I never dreamed it would catch on and things grow as quickly as they have. I mean, I was hopeful that that would happen, but you know, the best laid plans don't always go as you expect. So.
Now, let's take a look at the, first of all, at the 2016 schedule coming up. You're going to start your season at Atomic Speedway on April the 30th. And, you know, it is the Buckeye Outlaw Sprint Series. And we were talking actually leading into this interview that you definitely have the Buckeye State covered. You are bringing non-wing sprint car racing to the entire state of Ohio, it seems like.
Yeah, if you took the top 10 racetracks in Ohio and kind of ranked them in order of prestige, of course, hard to argue that Eldora would be at the top of that list. But you know, Fremont, Attica, Bonnie Milland, Wayne County, and Atomic, all known for their wing sprint car racing. And Portsmouth Raceway Park getting added to the schedule this year is a big addition. You know, they host the 100,000 to win Dirt Track World Championship. And it's been many years since they've had a sprint car event. I think it's been right around 20-some years since they had a wingless sprint car show, almost back to the beginnings of that racetrack.
I was going to ask about that because when that one got leaked out, because you went to the banquet and down there and such, and it was posted on social media. I saw that and I was absolutely floored. How in the world did you get a sprint car race at Portsmouth when that is traditionally, I mean, it's a huge late night venue, but they don't exactly book a lot of sprint car races. And as you said, they haven't booked much of anything the past 20 years. How in the world did you pull that off?
Well, I've worked on that from the day we started the series. You know, the first year was 2011. We only ran a couple of races. And every year, I've stayed in contact with them, and I've always been nice about it. They've turned me down 5 years in a row, and I just never gave up. And I think they saw the growth. 2 years ago, they made the comment that if the day came that they decided they were going to try a sprint car show, that I would be the first phone call that they made. And you know how that goes. People make promises all the time, and you don't know if they'll keep them or not. And, yeah, this year, I actually made the first phone call this year, too, and was surprised when they immediately started throwing out possible dates. And I thought, wow, this is happening this time. And when they invited me to come down to the banquet to make the announcement live, that's when we pretty much, you know, made the exact contract for July the 23rd. Should be a historic night.
No, that's going to be neat. And that's a neat facility, too. So that's going to be one that sprint car fans, I know a lot of sprint car fans like seeing different places, and for many people, that'll be a different one. Looking at the schedule, first three races are in Ohio. Of course, the opener at the High Banks at Atomic Speedway. Then you move into, I believe, the first of three dates, if I remember right, at Fremont Speedway before going to Wayne County towards the middle end of May as well.
Right, yeah. Fremont last year also had three events. We just have such bad luck with Fremont with rain out, so we have to give them three races to hopefully get at least one or hopefully two of them in. Over the years, we've scheduled two there every year, and we've managed to get one race in. The promoter, Rich Farmer, and I were just talking a couple of nights ago that literally we have gotten one race in there every year despite scheduling two or three. So, and then we also, Atomic Speedway, yes, got three events this year. They're the only two tracks to host the series three times. Two tracks also host the series twice apiece. And then the rest of them are all one-shot deals. But, yeah, Atomic got their three dates based, you know, on what happened last year. We went down there with a nice neutral facility, a lot of a very diverse group of race cars. We had some local guys mix in with us, some Indiana cars, of course, some Waynesfield cars, and then, of course, our Boss drivers. And it proved to be a great show. We had a three-car battle. I'm pretty sure the feature went green to checker for 25 laps, and it literally came down to where on the last lap, three different drivers had the lead at different points of that last lap. and they come to the finish line literally three wide for the finish in a three-car photo finish. Dallas Hewitt flips the length of the front straightaway, and Todd Kane narrowly edged out Hewitt and Landon Simon for the win.
I was going to say that, that Hewitt might have had part of that in the air, too, so it was pretty amazing.
That was such a huge event, you know, a positive response after the race. Now, the bad thing is I've got to try to live up to that this year, you know, with another great show. But with the excitement that that race generated, the talk, the fans around here went crazy over it. And, you know, in this area, you know, down here in Chillicothe, which is where I live, the Chillicothe-Portsmouth area, the fans rarely see wingless sprint cars. So to come in for the first time in several years having a show down here in the South, and to have a show go off like that, I mean, Walt Disney couldn't have written a better script.
Yeah, like you said, now the hard part's leading up or living up to topping it. So but I'm sure you guys will find a way to do it. You know, Wayne County has been a good home for you, too. That leads into a big weekend, though, where you go to Mercer at the end of May on Saturday night and then a Fremont for the Hensel Memorial, $5,000 to win. That's going to be a really neat weekend.
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to touch on the Wayne County Speedway.
Definitely.
Yeah, we kind of still call that our home racetrack, even though I live in Chillicothe and we've got three races down here at Atomic Speedway, and that's coincidentally it's where our first race ever was held back when it was still called KC Raceway. But Jason Flory up at Wayne County gave me the first big break when we were trying to get this series started. And I still laugh about it to this day. After the event that night, Jason came over to me and shook my hand, and he said, "I got to tell you the truth." He said, "When you said you were going to bring 30 cars up here, I didn't believe you." He said, "We thought we'd be lucky to get 15. And ironically, the car count that night was 30 on the nose. And how I predicted that, I was just giving him a generalization, but I knew we'd have quite a few cars. But Jason was happy, I was happy, and it was the second event ever by Boss, but that was really the event that launched the series. And Jason, of course, was the first one to step up. Jason and Jason Flory of Wayne County and Rich Farmer at Fremont were the first two promoters to go in full with me and say, "Okay, here's the deal. We are giving you, you know, multiple dates each year." So they were the two that helped me get this thing rolling. So, yeah, Wayne County is kind of a home racetrack for us. And then you said, yeah, well, after that, we go into our stretch of two-day races. We have a lot of doubleheaders, and it begins Memorial Day weekend. We go to Mercer on Saturday night. And Sunday of Memorial Day weekend, we used to be a two-day all-star show at Fremont, and this year that's become a one-day Saturday night race, and now we get to come in with the Hensel race on Sunday, and hopefully this is a home for that event. We've had trouble finding a weekend that it fits well into, and we're thinking maybe a Sunday of Memorial Day weekend could be a permanent home for it.
And for my readers that follow me to Anderson every year for the Saturday program, the Little 500, I've done the Anderson to Fremont Drive. It's pretty easy, and I think I'm going to be doing it this year because that's going to be a big weekend. So I think we'll be leading the caravan from Anderson, Indiana, over to Fremont that weekend for you. So that'll be pretty cool.
Sounds good. Now
the next weekend, Limaland Motorsports Park, which was a that's on June the 10th. That was a new event for you last year, and obviously it must have went well enough that they have invited you back again this season.
I cannot remember what our car count was exactly, but I know it was in the low 40s, and just a fantastic show. I think we had five heat races that night, two B mains, excellent race. Thomas Meserol won the race. But yeah, they were very happy. We were happy. Obviously, it fits into our game plan, you know, all the Ohio, quality Ohio racetracks. It's one thing that we did, you know, we didn't have a lot of races on the schedule when we started this deal in 2011 and 2012, but we've always been pretty selective on where we go. We try to go to name brand facilities, you know, nice high quality places, for two reasons. One, because we want our shows to be successful, but also it's a safety issue. You know, we make sure these are all quality racetracks. But yeah, Limaland obviously fits our game plan. The show went well. It's a no-brainer to do it again.
And, of course, when you're talking about nice facilities, following that up, you're going to Lawrenceburg Speedway in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, which that place is practically palatial. It's a beautiful place, and get you guys on the high banks again.
Yeah, we love Lawrenceburg Speedway. It may be the premier facility here in the Midwest. I really believe, in terms of how nice it is, it rivals Eldora Speedway. They've got the nice suites there. You can pull into that facility and you come in on concrete. You can park on, you know, concrete or maybe a little bit of grass there, but everything is paved in and around the racetrack. You know, if you've got business associates, someone you need to impress, and you want to take them to a facility, I think Lawrenceburg's the place to go. And Dave Rudisdale down at Lawrenceburg, he has also been instrumental, like Jason Flory and Rich Farmer were. He was another one of the early contributors to this series that gave me dates.
And then you make the trip to Western Pennsylvania again for the whole weekend this time, Friday, July 1st and Saturday, July 2nd, pairing up Lernerville Speedway and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania Motor Speedway. So you go to a 4/10 mile and then the monster track at PPMS, which you guys have had quite a few shows there. A lot of people probably would maybe not look at that place as, you know, it's too big, maybe for allowing sprint car races. But you guys not only have raced there, but you've put on good races there as well.
Yeah, we've had really good luck there. The competition has just been fantastic. We had a driver come from deep in the field a couple years ago, Kirk Jeffries. I believe he started around 11th or so in the feature and comes up to win that thing. And it's proven to be super competitive. When the first time I laid eyes on it, it was the first year we had races there in 2012, and I thought to myself, well, this could be boring. This could be bad. And it has proven to be the exact opposite. Last year, we have, of course, our open tire rule. We have guys on all four American racers and some guys on all four Hoosier tires. We had an early caution, but the last 20 laps or so, that race ran green to checker, and it literally came down to a photo finish. We had about three races last year that came down to photo finishes on with guys on one guy being on all American racers and the other driver being on all Hoosiers. And Pittsburgh was one of them. Cody Swanson barely edged out Sean Westerfeld for the win there. So exciting racing, and unfortunately we also have the dubious distinction of being the only sprint car to go out of the facility at Pittsburgh Motor Speedway a few years ago. We had a car go clean over the turn one and two wall, which was a scary situation, but the driver was okay.
Yep, and next time probably a few more people showed up. So sometimes yeah. It works like that. The next weekend, Friday, July the 8th, and this is something that's been in the works for a little while. I thought it was going to happen last year. It didn't, but you're going to Attica Raceway Park, and I think this is going to be a great fit for this series, as Attica's proven to have some great non-wing sprint car racing in the past.
Yeah, I am. The last one that I can remember, actually, I was in that race. It was the Jack Hewitt Classic, or Jack Hewitt Challenge, I believe they called it. The night Rob Chaney won both events. Rob won the wing race and the non-wing and won a big bonus. I think it was like a $10,000 bonus if you won them both, and Chaney did it. I think that was the last wingless event that I can recall anyway. But Attica fits in with Portsmouth Raceway Park. It's another situation where, you know, I've made the phone calls over the years and, you know, left the messages and just always told them I'd get back with them, you know, the next season. And sooner or later, you know, you feel like it finally pays off.
And then you're going to follow that up with going to Waynesfield Raceway Park the next night. So two races for Ohio people, pretty close together, reasonable travel for the fans and the race teams. But that Waynesfield race is always an interesting one, I feel, for you guys, because they have drivers that race at Waynesfield, non-wing sprint cars, every, you know, Saturday night. It's the Ohio's weekly non-wing sprint car track. And you have Ohio's non-wing series coming in for kind of like a clash of the titans there. I think it's a pretty neat deal.
It really is a unique situation. You know, we go in there and our drivers get the opportunity to go out and see all these new racetracks, and on neutral ground, I think we have the advantage over their regulars. But it is so hard to go in and beat someone on their own racetrack. Those guys that race there weekly, people like Matt Westfall and Kyle Steinman and those guys, they have got that track nailed down. They know how to run that place. It is tough to go in and beat those guys, you know, for my drivers, but we look forward to the challenge every year. And Waynesfield, we get along great with them. We're glad. I was telling Danny Kelly just the other day that helped promote that place that, you know, we're proud to have them as the weekly wingless home of wingless racing in the state of Ohio. And we go out like disciples spreading the word going around the rest of the state. And that works out really well for both of us.
And for anyone that hasn't been there, that place is wicked fast. I mean, I couldn't believe it the first time I went there. It blew me away. It's a little joint, but man, cars just fly around that place.
Yeah, it really is. For as small as it is, it's deceiving how quick the place can be. So, yeah, it's always a good race as well. We have high car counts, obviously, with that being a weekly wingless racetrack. I believe, I think at one point that held the record at 54 cars until we had 56 at Eldora last year. Yeah, Waynesfield was our record from 2014 when we had 54 cars.
And then
so follow- I don't think we've ever been to Waynesville with less than 45 or so.
Yeah, so if you're looking for big car counts, that's a good one to hit. We hit on the Portsmouth weekend, July 23rd, going down to the Portsmouth Raceway. The following weekend, another two-day program, Whitewater Valley Speedway, Liberty, Indiana. That's not one we see. We see it pop up on schedules every now and then. I think it's been on yours a few times, but going to Liberty and following that up with Lawrenceburg.
Yeah, we were at Liberty there 2 years ago. And that deal, you know, I've got that on the schedule, and I hope I didn't jump the gun there, but there is a lease in progress there is what's happening.
Okay.
And the promoter who is going to have that race, he has the race for sure, and he's got an option at a couple of facilities. But I was just told right before we pushed the schedule today that it will be Whitewater unless we hear otherwise. And we're pretty sure it is. We're still very confident. That's why I went ahead and put it on the schedule. I just hate releasing schedules with the little TBA out there. We wait until our schedule is pretty well confirmed, and we put out our schedule, and it usually does not change. But, the Whitewater is a neat little quarter-mile bull ring. 2 years ago, we had 35 sprint cars there that night, and one of our own drivers, Logan Hupp, battled USAC driver Kevin Thomas Jr. in a slide job battle for the ages. It was an epic battle, and proud to say that Logan Hupp, driving the Ray Marshall number 2 car, one of our own boss cars, defeated the USAC driver that night. So it was like David slaying Goliath there. So
a neat story there, leading from the Liberty race course, going back to Lawrenceburg. And then August 6th, another visit to Wayne County. So one of their races there. But then Friday, August 26th, you go to Hilltop Speedway. Like I said, we're going everywhere in Ohio with this series, taking it to Hilltop, following it up with a visit to Atomic Speedway again. But Hilltop, another venue where you're taking the non-wing sprint cars where they're not normally seen.
Right, yeah. We struggled a little bit with car count over there. We ran there last year. And to say struggle, most people would think this.
You know, I was going to say, said you're struggling. You had, 24 cars or something. You didn't 20, have a B main 20, or something.
22, 23, something like that. Yeah, we chose to start everyone, which that was a unique situation. On a track is small.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That's a very small track. It may be the smallest track we run on all year. We started everyone that night, and Landon Simon won the feature, and another excellent show. The crowd loved it. And what we're starting to notice, for the first time last year, we had a souvenir trailer, merchandise trailer, that traveled to every show. And now we're starting to see the impact, not only of how it helps grow the series, but we're able to gauge how popular we are at tracks. And we go to a venue like Legendary Hilltop, and I believe we did more in sales there than we did at any other racetrack, including Eldora Speedway. Now, at Eldora, there's obviously a lot more competition. There were several souvenir trailers. At Hilltop, we were the only one, but still the people were eating up the Boss merchandise.
Yeah, and we use the air quotes when you go, struggle. Yeah, okay. So you take Labor Day, it looks like, off, which is probably good for your working man teams, but you come back in action September the 10th, Montpelier Motor Speedway, and you guys broke the ice there and brought a strong car count to Montpelier and are returning there again this season.
Yeah, this will be the third year in a row we've had this September same weekend, this September date. It's worked out well for the track. It's worked well for us. Great car counts. We get a mixture, some Indiana regulars, of course, our Boss drivers. We get a few surprises because Waynesfield's already closed by that point, so we get a few of the Waynesfield cars. And then we always get some of the Shane Cottles, Robert Ballews. We've had John Stanbro has come in and run with us there before. We get quite a few of the USAC guys who will come in and invade. And another interesting venue. It's a neat little racetrack located right in town, which is also somewhat unique. Fremont's like that as well, though. Montpelier is located right in town and has, I think, a history of well over 100 years of racing. It began with horse racing there, and I think they first started running cars right around 100 years ago as well.
Yeah, you can actually still see the grade of some of where the horse track was there. It's a really neat place, and it's got almost like a park feel to it when you're there, because it used to be a fairgrounds. It still kind of feels like a park when you're there. It's a really interesting place to go see a race, and one of my favorites during the year. And then you follow that up with going to the Millstream Speedway in Findlay, Ohio, and with the Hammers there doing a great job of reviving that racetrack, and you guys have been part of that as well.
Yeah, last year, that was part of a three-day weekend, and I'll tell you what, how the guys do the week-long speed weeks, especially the series officials, our three-day weekend last year wore me out, so we decided this year to try to move Millstream to another weekend. And, you know, I think that's a good pairing. The drive from Montpelier to Millstream is not that bad. I think it's about an hour and 40 minutes, if I'm not mistaken. And it works out well. You know, a fall weekend like that could be a good way for Millstream Speedway to start closing down the season.
Yep, and then from there you make another visit to Atomic Speedway on September the 24th, followed up by a visit to Fremont on October 1st, and then closing the season again at the UNOH Sprintacular on October the 8th at Eldora Speedway. And Eldora seems to be a fitting place to close the season. You know, the big track venue with being part of those three divisions there, that program, that's become, I think, maybe my favorite race program of the year, and you guys bring it with the cars. Everyone wants to come to that show, it seems like.
You know, it's sad that we have to run last at the end of the night, because it's just the way they've always set it up. Obviously, the All-Stars and the NRA were there long before we got there, but the most common thing we hear from people is that Boss is the show. I even put that in our press release last year, that I put in capital letters, the show, talking about the Boss portion of it. Six heat races, two B mains, a great 25-lap feature. I believe this year, if I'm not... Is it this year or the year before, we had two B mains, and they went green to checker, and so did the feature. Good racing, clean racing. Of course, when you're on a big, nice racetrack like that, well lit, helps keep everyone out of trouble anyway. But yeah, it's Eldora is a great way to close the season out. Our past champions have all been in agreement on this, that, you know, it's tough for guys. We always get invaded by the USAC guys. It's tough for these guys to win a feature at Eldora to get on the stage. But as our champion, you are the last person. You get the stage all to yourself there at the end of the night as the Boss champion. So good place for us to close out the season.
Yeah, it seems like to me, when it comes to Ohio Sprint Car Racing, when I think of closing out the season, I was always sad when that October show had gone away for a while. And I like the way it is now even better. So, I mean, to me, I just love closing my season out, or closing the Ohio portion of my season out there. It always just seems like a good fit to me. So, but anyway, moving on. One of the things I love about your series is it really seems to attract the working man racer. You have a lot of racers at, you know, that bust their butts to get out there. It, that seems to be a breed that is maybe lacking in our sport a little bit, but it seems to drive your series. And to me, it's interesting that your series draws that mix, because you do a lot of travel. It's not like you're not covering a lot of geography. So even with the travel involved, why do you think your series appeals to that working man racer?
Well, first of all, we've taken a different approach. You know, we spread the money out really well. Our races aren't known for paying a lot of money to win. $1,500 to win is not that great of a win payout. The wing guys, I'm sure, scoff at it and laugh at it. But, you know, we pay so well back through the field. You know, our guys that are running third, fourth, fifth, sixth, a lot of times are better off than the guys who are running at the local wing tracks. We pay very well to start, and I take care of my points travelers. The guys who commit to the series are on a little bit of a bonus program. But, you know, I've been very picky in my scheduling. We were offered a race this year. If you'll notice on our schedule, there's one major Ohio racetrack lacking, and that's Sharon Speedway. And I'm sure they won't mind me sharing this, that they offered us a date, but it was a Thursday night race. My drivers, most of them working guys, they own businesses or have full-time jobs. They have enough trouble getting off work on the Friday events that we have. They have to budget their vacation time and try to use one day at a time to get to all the Friday races. To add a Thursday show would require them taking 2 days off. So we weren't able to do that. So I keep that in mind. I also, these guys that are run my series, it's very common for me to just be sending out group text messages to them, asking them their opinion on a lot of things. So I think they feel like they're involved. This isn't a club. I obviously own it and run it, but I still treat it like a club type situation where I take everyone's input and I value it. I think the guys appreciate that, and the fact that I do keep the travel somewhat limited to where we have the two-day weekends. If you'll notice, there's a lot of weekends off in between our two-day weekends to give the guys a break if they want to stay home, time to rebuild. It's important to spend time with family. You know, they need to do that as well. But I think the guys appreciate the way I've done this. And one last thing, I'm still a racer myself, so I think that garners a little bit of respect from the guys because I'm still doing it with them. However, I've been smart enough to stay out of my own events. That's the one thing I think that too many promoters make the mistake of, is themselves or a sibling or a kid or something that races in their own division or their own track And it just, even though, you know, if you're not pulling any strings or doing any cheating, it just doesn't look good. You can't be an effective leader when you're not in a position to be the leader. So I've stayed out of the driver's seat, you know, at my own events. And I think that's also, you know, helped the guys that support me, you know, stay with me. I think they see that I'm trying to go about this the right way.
Aaron Fry from the MoVon Transport Buckeye Outlaw Sprint Series joining us, talking about their 2016 schedule. Five seasons. I mean, it seems to have flown by. There's probably some days with you it feels like it's 10 seasons. Some days it probably feels like it was yesterday. But I always say that building something's one thing, but maintaining success is another thing. Which have you found to be more difficult in with this series, the building up of it, or actually the maintaining the good things you have going into the recent seasons?
I would say probably the maintaining is a little more difficult. I mean, you know, people will give you a chance from time to time. You know, just like waiting your turn, like with Portsmouth and with Attica, it took several years. They finally given us the green light now. Now we go in, we put on a show, well, making sure everything comes off well and, you know, to get back on the schedule again the following year, that sometimes proved to be even trickier. And we've been really fortunate, you know, that everything has just always gone well. You'll struggle to find a racetrack out there or have anything bad to say about the boss show that they've had. Even a few tracks we've lost along the way, some tracks closed, sometimes it was promoters changing ownership. Sometimes things just don't work out, like with Sharon Speedway this year. I just couldn't do the dates that they offered me. Maintaining like a good relationship, working relationship is not difficult. You just got to do what you say, you know, be a man of your word and stick to your guns, you know, when the time comes. The one thing I think is killing this sport and what makes it difficult to maintain these relationships is the politics. And unfortunately, I find myself in the middle of them sometimes. Two tracks will be feuding, and I'll have a track say, hey, you can't go here, you can't go there. And I've made it very clear that we stay out of the politics of this thing. I schedule any racetrack that is good for my series and for my drivers.
And they have that understanding going in. I mean, you know, it's upfront about it. They're, you know, what are they going to say? I mean, you know, you've got to do best for your race teams and whatnot. So, and speaking of that, the open tire rule is one of the open rules in your division, in your series, has been a eye opener for several. You know, it seems to work to me. I mean, obviously with the car counts and whatnot, and you know, if you haven't gone the route of the spec tire deal. And to me, and I openly say it, that I think the spec tire deal has become more about a sponsorship aspect than a helping the racer aspect. But you guys have the open tire rule, the open engine rule and everything, and have got bucked the trend. Do you feel like if you would have hypothetically started out with that, would it have been hard to go back to this way, to go back to an open tire if you had gone to a spec tire? And are, you know, looking back on it, are you happy with making the decision to go with this package that you have now?
Oh, I absolutely, I wouldn't have had it any other way. Part of my reason for starting this whole series, you know, I, as a racer myself, at that point, I had been doing it, I believe, around 13 or 14 years. And I had watched it go, what in my opinion, down the wrong path, the sport, with things like the spec tires. I remember when the spec right rears came out, American Racer down here at KC Raceway, Atomic Speedway, was the MC2. And the tire was about saving the driver's money. We had to run the one tire all night. It was a pretty hard tire. It would last a while. You could even flip it around and run it, you know, the other direction, you know, the next week to get a sharp bleeding edge. And the tire was inexpensive. Over the years, through the Goodyear transition, you went to Hoosiers, then to Goodyear, then back to Hoosiers, and it just seems like it got to be more and more about putting money in the racetrack promoters' pockets to pay points funds. And that's one thing I'm very proud of about the Boss Series. You know, here we are 5 years old, always paid a good, strong cash points fund plus prizes, and we've never had tire money help as far as a tire manufacturer paying that point fund for us. And I know a lot of tracks and series live off of that tire money. Now, we do have American Racer and Hoosier both sponsoring a heat race through the course of the season, which is, you know, we're one of the few series in the whole country probably that pay out heat race money. And they've both been good about donating us $100 a night, to the, which all goes toward the guys in their respective heat races.
That is a neat program.
We've been good about that. Huh?
That is a neat program, yeah. And to me, you know, it seems like it's one of those things where if it got your hooks into you, it'd be really hard to to get out of it. And I think that's what's happened is people have gotten, it's like if you get a taste of chocolate, you want more chocolate later on. And unfortunately, that's kind of what's happened with that. But I am in full agreement with you on that. And I think it's admirable what you've done. You know, you've been around for five seasons. We mentioned it in the series has had steady growth. It's maintained. Where would you like to see the Buckeye Outlaw Sprint Series over the next 5 years?
Well, this goes back to the growth situation you ask about, which is harder to do, to, you know, maintain or to grow. One of the biggest problems I've got with my series is trying not to grow too big too fast. The 22-race schedule we put out, I could pretty easily have put out a 40-race schedule if I wanted to. And what would have happened, I would have alienated probably 60 to 70% of the teams currently following the tour, because they couldn't afford to run that many races. They can't take off work that much. They probably have wives divorcing them. It would be an ugly situation.
Yeah, so, and that, I can sympathize with that. So well, I appreciate weekends off myself. I noticed you things like you keep Labor Day open. I mean, to me, that's a great thing. I mean, because you'll race Memorial Day, but you give them the Labor Day weekend, and you know that gives right. them at least a holiday weekend and you know, 4 day weekend, and remember what their kids and their wife look like and stuff like that, and to get together the family.
We actually had an offer for Labor Day weekend, but it was a track that was already on the schedule, and we try not to go to tracks too often. And it was a situation where we knew we were taking up the 4th of July weekend and the Memorial Day weekend for the family. And I thought, you know, I better give them at least one of these weekends off. And that's a key to our series, though, is trying to work with teams. And you know, I listen to their, you know, their input and try to take that under consideration. But the growing, you know, you asked about where you'd like to see the series in, you know, 5 or 10 years, you know, if we continue to grow, I'm at a little bit of a crossroads here. We've come up with some different ideas. The War Series out to the west there, they split their series and have like an east and a west, which I think now is going back to one. So I don't think that works too well. But we've talked about maybe running a smaller series of events, but making the high-paying events and then keeping the regular Boss Tour separated so we can add some shows. But we're really at a crossroads here. I've got tracks farther east, I've got tracks farther west, tracks farther north than what we're running right now, all asking for dates, and I just simply can't get there, not without alienating the teams that have built this series, and I'm not going to do that. So we're trying to grow without growing too big too fast.
And to me, if you could maintain what you're doing now, I don't think that's any loss, to be honest. Or, you know, if you can keep the same, you know, maybe more a bigger point fund or whatever. You know what? If you put out the schedule 5 years from now, I think that would be successful, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I appreciate that. Yeah. We've had a lot of good supporters, though. We've got a group of sponsors. You know, obviously, Movon Transport. We went a little different route where everybody else keeps taking the tire money and chasing the same sponsors around. We thought outside the box a little bit, which has started, you know, by accident, just being in the right place at the right time. But, you know, we were able to get Mo Vaughn involved, who, of course, comes from the baseball world, a former Boston Red Sox player. And he's the title sponsor of the series. But we've got some other great people that help us out tremendously. Like I said, Hoosier and American Racer sponsoring heat races. We have Buckeye Machine, who was a title sponsor a couple years ago, still doing a heat race. Several sponsors that there's too many to list here. We're going to have them all up on the website again, of course.
Yeah, I'd go visit the website and the Facebook page and everything else, and you'll see them there. How in the world do you get Mo Vaughn, former baseball player, to how did that happen? This has to be a good story, how Mo Vaughn gets involved with the Buckeye Outlaw Sprint Series.
Well, I've been a lifelong Boston Red Sox fan, and I was wearing a shirt and hat. It was during their 2013 run to the World Series, and we were at Eldora Speedway, and one of my other sponsors, we have a Harley-Davidson dealership, Southeast Harley-Davidson of Cleveland, Ohio, that sponsors a heat race. The owner of the manager of the dealership saw my Red Sox attire, and he asked if I knew Mo Vaughn. And I said, well, of course, yeah. You know, he played several years ago for the Red Sox, big power hitter, an all-star. I think 1995 American League MVP. You know, he was pretty popular. And he said, hey, Mo Vaughn buys his motorcycles at our dealership. So, yeah, I still didn't think anything of it. Well, the next time Mo Vaughn was in the dealership, he mentioned to Mo that about me and being a big fan, and told him I owned the Sprint Car Series. Well, ironically, Mo had an interest in performance cars. He had some hot rods, some motorcycles, you know, just anything performance intrigued him. He asked what a sprint car was. Well, that led to a YouTube video there in the office of the Harley-Davidson dealership. He liked it, and that just one thing led to another. They set up the meeting, and we got Mo involved.
It's amazing. Friends helping friends in the business. Aaron Fry from the Movon Transport Buckeye Outlaw Sprint Series. One other thing that you've done that no other series has done is you've actually done some drug testing. And this has been a topic that a lot of people don't want to delve into or either want to delve into head on, like Jeremy Elliott and some other people. But you guys have tackled it as a series and have come up with a program because you guys are working class racers for the most part. These guys have to go to work on Monday. You don't need somebody that might be under the influence of something possibly, you know, being, you know, out there with those people. What has been the reception of that program and how did it work out this season?
So far, it's been 110% positive. The tracks have been positive about it. A lot of people just didn't want to step up and take the bull by the horns in this situation because they were afraid of liability. And in my situation, actually, I'm afraid of the liability of not drug testing, you know, of not taking control of a situation. But when you're the promoter of a series like this, especially my daughter helps me with it. It's a family-run series, and it's also a group of drivers that are all a close-knit group. And you've got to look out for the best interest of not just yourself, but also the people that are supporting you in this deal. And I'm doing this to help to defend my drivers, just like in the situation we all know about up in New York. You know, that didn't just cost one life, it about ruined two lives, you know, financially and, you know, so forth. And for my drivers, I'm doing this in the best interest of the people who support me. I don't think we have any kind of drug problem in our series, but just to make sure someone from outside our series doesn't come in, cause a problem on the racetrack, and it ends up costing one of my drivers, you know, half of their life fortune or something.
Aaron Fry.
Okay. It's worked out very well so far, though.
That's good to hear. Aaron Fry joining us here. And, well, a lot of people don't know. You touched on it. You've driven and you continue to drive, but you're a racer of all kinds. You've done everything from the Sandusky Hangover to wing sprint cars, non-wing sprint cars, and all kinds of stuff. But also, you have a fascination with racing history. I mean, in somewhat of finding racetracks that used to be around where there might not be much of anything left, and you managed to find them. So what, you know, the driving aspect I get, but what kindled your love with racing history?
As a teenager, I got my friend of mine and I, we both just gotten our driver's licenses, and we're out running the backcountry roads just looking for something to do. And I said, hey, there was an old racetrack up here that had shut down a few years before, one that I had gone to as a kid. Probably your listeners will have never heard of it. It's called Checkered Flag Raceway over in Ashland, Kentucky. And we drove out by to check it out. Well, they were in the process of tearing the place down. And it really made me sad. I mean, that's one of the tracks that influenced me as a kid, you know, part of the reason why I'm talking to you now. And to see it being dismantled was just, you know, disheartening. So I started keeping a little list of the local tracks in our area and talking to old-timers about other tracks that existed. And then Alan Brown from the National Speedway Directory printed a book called The History of America's Speedways. And he had a pretty good list, nowhere near complete, but he had a list that covered nearly the entire country of tracks that existed over the years. I took that and ran with it. His information was very general, and he had missed a lot of racetracks, and I've kind of fine-tuned that. And I've got a lot of people tell me I need to write a book, and someday that's probably going to happen. But, yeah, I've found probably an additional 50 tracks not listed in his book, and we've even gone to the point now on Google Earth of locating the tracks and making maps of them where they actually sat, and now I'm to the point of trying to find promoters' names and winners and track champions and everything from some of these long-forgotten speedways.
That's so cool. And that's one of the neat things I get to do every now and then because I work out in Allen's neighborhood. So I see him at the gas station and stuff every now and then. So and that gas station stop turns into about a 20-minute conversation every time. And it usually involves something of that nature. But it's neat to see someone with that kind of passion behind this. Well, you know, Aaron, I can't say enough about the series. I mean, it's impressed me, the growth and everything that you've done. Growing it, what do you think is the most surprising thing that maybe it may have been easier than you thought it would have been? And what do you think was a little bit harder after 5 years than you thought it would be with the Boss series?
Well, you know, I came in probably a little bit naive to the situation. you know, as far as being hard, I didn't realize how hard it would be for everybody to just get along. I went in just thinking, I'll schedule this track, I'll schedule that track, and then come to find out there were certain tracks that literally just refused to work with another racetrack. And it wasn't as easy putting deals together as what I thought. And, you know, from the driver standpoint and spectator standpoint, which is where I was coming from before I became a promoter, you always thought that the perfect pairing of racetracks were two tracks that were really close together with a short drive. In reality, those tracks don't want to be paired together for a doubleheader weekend because they literally are too close together. They're sharing the same fans. The fans only want to come out and see the same show once. They don't want to go back to back a lot of times to see the same shows. So that's why some of our doubleheaders, you know, they're a little longer drive. Sometimes it's 2 hours between them. After a Mercer, you know, we go all the way over to Fremont, which is about a 2.5 hour drive, I believe. But we just, you know, a lot of tracks don't want to be paired up real close together. So that's probably what surprised me the most. But as far as easier than anticipated, you know, I won't say it was easy. It's there again. It's just a matter of doing what you say you're going to do. I just always make sure that I have under-promised and over-delivered on the items, you know, the things I've said and done for people. And the car count building, you know, our very first event had 15 cars. Nobody really knew who I was. Nobody knew what to expect. We had 15. That is, of course, the lowest we ever had. It's never gone back to that point. We go to race number two, and we had 30 cars. We literally doubled our car count, and from there on, it was just crazy. You know, we had car counts in the 30s and 40s most of the time since then, sometimes in the 50s. And so building the car count proved to be a little easier than I anticipated it being. But just there again, like I said, it's just a matter of doing what you say you're going to do and coming through on your promises.
Aaron Fry from the Movon Transport, Buckeye Outlaw Sprint Series, getting ready for another campaign. And you can find out more information, BuckeyeSprints.com. That's where you can find the schedule, all kinds of great information there. And my favorite part of the interview, you used one of my favorite phrases I use in life, whether it's involving racing, work, or anything else, under-promise, over-deliver. And me, right there, that's mottos to live by. Well, Aaron, I really appreciate you coming on with us tonight and spending about 40 minutes with us, which I anticipated 20, but you get a couple guys talking racing, and I should just start doubling whatever I think it's going to be, because it's so much fun to talk to someone like you and get going on these things that we can just get going for a little while.
Well, some people say I talk too much, but the sad thing is every time we move on to another topic, I was thinking in my head of another 10 things I could have said on the previous topic. So they're not getting me talking too much.
Well, I was going to say, we've got a whole winter of podcasts to get through. So we'll probably be calling upon you again, whether it's this winter or next winter or during the season. I'm sure we're going to have plenty to talk about. So best of luck in 2016, and I'll look forward to seeing you out at the racetrack.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Aaron Fry from the Buckeye Outlaw Sprint Series, brought to you by Movon Transport. That's going to wrap up this edition of the TJ Slideways Podcast. Thank you for listening, and good night.